personal finance, the census, and local journalism in the time of coronavirus. For so many people, the best laid financial plans are in turmoil right now. It's scary. Maybe you've lost your job. Maybe you've been watching the value of your retirement savings account swing wildly with the stock market. Maybe you are worried about loans or foreclosure. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we continue our special two-hour programs. In the first hour, our guest is nationally syndicated Washington Post personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary. In the second hour, we'll spend a few minutes talking with Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap about the U.S. Census. This is Census Day. And then we'll check in with our panel of Maine editorial page editors for our Month in Review program and discuss how journalists are covering the pandemic. Maine Calling is next, but first, news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some, the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated already existing financial challenges. For others, the crisis created a new set of personal finance issues. Today, in the first hour of our program, we'll get advice on ways to address some of these concerns. In the second hour of today's program, we'll talk with our panel of news editors about the top issues affecting Maine people and how they are covering the coronavirus crisis. We will also hear from Maine's Secretary of State, Matt Dunlap, in the second hour. He'll talk about the census and more. Joining me now is Michelle Singletary. She writes the personal column she writes the personal finance column for the Washington Post and is the author of three personal finance books, including her latest, The 21-Day Financial Fast, Your Path to Financial Peace and Freedom. Michelle Singletary, thank you for joining us. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Are you worried about your financial future? What are your questions about how to cope financially during this crisis? You can share your stories or questions at email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, just yesterday, you started your column by saying when you're in a financial crisis, it is hard to think clearly. And so I was wondering if you could start with maybe some philosophical or psychological advice, just if someone is feeling themselves sort of getting pulled under and panicking by what's going on, what is your broad advice to the millions of people who feel like their lives have been upended?
Well, I try to advise people to do what I'm trying to do, which is just take a moment, pause, and breathe. Even if you have your finances in order, it's very scary because if you're not impacted, you probably know somebody who is. Your daughter, your sister-in-law, brother-in-law, relatives abroad, across the country. And so before you make a move, just breathe and pause. That's the thing, breathe and pause, because I'm concerned that people will jump to do something and it will be the wrong thing because they're making financial decisions based on their feelings. So feel what you feel, which could be, you're scared, you're worried, but then don't make a decision based on that. If you can't, just take a step back and think about it, because I'm going to be honest. I've been freaking out about the market, too. Can I tell you that for real? Because, when you write about this stuff, you know what the experts say. You talk to them all the time. You're like, yeah. Then when you have to do it, you're like, And actually, one other tip is, have somebody in your life who is the calm person. And for me, that's my husband, right? He's the glass half full kind of person. I'm the glass half empty. And so whenever I'm moving it all out, I don't care what the experts say, I'll go into his office, because we're working at home too, and I'll just let out on him, and he just says, okay, breathe, pause, you're not doing anything. And I say, okay, baby. And then I'll go back to my office.
Oh my gosh, I think that's such great advice for so many of us. Find the calm person and breathe. So yeah. Let's start. Maine is no different than other states around the country where we've seen so many more unemployment claims just an astronomical number of unemployment claims compared to years past. We are a very an economy up here very strongly dependent on tourism. There are a lot of restaurants and hotels and people who support the hospitality industry, the food industry. All of those people, or most of those people, suddenly out of work or with their hours slashed. What do you tell them, Michelle? Although we're taking some time to breathe, it's also not a bad idea to get that unemployment claim in as soon as possible, right?
That's exactly right. If you've lost income and you've been laid off, file right away. Now, we say that knowing that the lines are full. People can't get through. They can't even get through online, but keep trying. I just talked to my best friend who's, you know, her son is in Maryland and he's unemployed. And I said, try different times of the hour, like, you know, set a clock to get up at 3 a.m. in the morning so that when there's less people online to do it. And then take stock of the money that you have, what's in your bank account, and then list the essential things that you have to pay for and let everything else go. And you know, I'm always telling people, pay your debts, you know, pay more if you can. Your debts can wait right now. I'm talking about credit card debt and some other things that you might have. Because if you've got a student loan, you know, call and put that on pause. So the main things is the roof over your head, food on the table, and if for some reason you still are able to go out and work, you know, transportation costs. Those are the major things. And just concentrate on that. And here's the thing, you know, often we tell people cut off cable and things like that. I wouldn't advise doing cutting off everything, because if we're all in our homes, you know, you'll just go stir crazy. So maybe you've got three streaming services, just, you know, eliminate two of them. You know, call your cable company, go to a basic plan. Like some people have the sports packages. I know you Maine folks like your sports, so, but they're not playing. So, you know, cut that off. Look for everything. If you're at home, you know, maybe a lot of your costs have been reduced, so that money should still be in your account. Just focus on the things that you have to pay for right now. I wrote in my column for the Post, and you can go to WashingtonPost.com and look up my column on, you know, the order in which you go to find cash. And, you know, from the first to the last, you know, first thing is if you can get a job, because lots of call centers and grocery stores are looking for people, put your pride to the side. Because if you've got a degree or you've worked in a field and you know you're smart and you're thinking, I don't want to do that, you've got to not say that to yourself. And then, and we talked about it at the top of the hour, file for unemployment right away. Do it now. And, you know, it's interesting, Jennifer, that a lot of people feel like they shouldn't apply for it. They feel like it's a handout. It's welfare. But that's a benefit that you earn, even if you're a gig worker or self-employed, because now you can also get an unemployment check. You know, this is not the time to let pride dictate your actions. And so I hope this is helpful. I know it's not the answer to all people's questions, but there is an order that you can do things to make things a little better for yourself down the road.
All right. So whether or not you're looking at perhaps losing your job, a lot of us have money in the stock market, even if we have never bought a single stock, you know, through a broker, we probably have a 401k or a 403b or some sort of a pension program, and we are watching these wild swings in the stock market. As you said, and our pulse is racing and our stomach is dropping. And I'm wondering, what do we do with this information as we watch the value of our retirement savings just go up and down and down and down and a little bit up and down some more?
Well, there's really two categories of people. If you have done what you're supposed to do and it's well diversified, you've got stocks and bonds and you have a plan and you've got years to retirement, do nothing. I know that sounds crazy, but you've got time for the market, because the market will come back. It will. It always has. Even after the Great Depression, it came back. Now, will it take a year or two or 10? We don't know, but it will come back. And you got that time. Stop looking at your account. Like, I have an app on my phone. I actually need to delete it. But I'm telling you the truth. I have not looked at my account since maybe mid-March. And I write about this stuff because I know that if I look, I'm going to completely freak out. So I'm not looking, because once you look, then your anxiety level goes up and you may make a move that is not right for you. So just don't look and just do nothing. Because even after the 2008, 2009 financial crisis, you know, people panicked, jumped out, and they weren't able to ride the market back up, and they lost. They truly did lose money. Because here's the thing, you only lose that money when you actually sell. Right now, that's paper losses. So don't look. Don't look at the app. Go do something else. Go run. Go pat your dog. You know, go read a book. Don't look. Now, if you have been put too much in the market, you're too risky, you might need to do some rebalancing. And then I really suggest that you talk to a professional so you do it the right way. So you might need to do some things and, you know, look for a fee-only financial planner. You can go online, just type in fee-only financial planner association, and you'll find a link for to contact someone or call friends who may have a planner and say, like, I need help. If you have a 401k or some sort of retirement plan, call that company that manages that plan. So if it's Fidelity or Vanguard or TIAA, call them and say, listen, I think I was overexposed. What can I do? All of the companies I talked to said they are willing to talk to people.
Wonderful. You know, we have a question along this line, so I'm going to go ahead and go to it now. We're going to go to Len, who's calling from Old Orchard. Hi, Len. What's your question for Michelle Singletary?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say people are worried about their finances and their savings and their 401 savings plans, but they just need to, you know, take it easy and think about it. And if they have cash, it's a buying opportunity right now. And the market went down almost 30%. And, you know, everything's at a bargain. So I would just say that people take it easy and buy if they can. I wouldn't sell anything, that's for sure.
Yeah, Lennon, thank you. Thank you for that. We also have a question that's related from Alex, Michelle. He writes, I'm in my 20s and have not yet invested in stocks. Is this a good time to start? So is this a buying opportunity for some?
I think for some it is. I would ask Alex if he just make sure that you got your personal finance things together. You know, lots of people are being laid off or furloughed. So I want you to first make sure that you've got the cash that you need for your expenses. But if you're still working from home and you're getting paid, it is absolutely a great time. In fact, Alex, oh my gosh. You are so young, and you have so much time for the market to make good returns. You have something that a lot of us don't have, including me. I'm kind of old, which is time. So this is how you do it. Don't rush and buy, like, a particular stock. Do what the experts call it, dollar cost averaging. So, Alex, you would decide, I'm going to put $200 in the market every month, do it automatic. You can do it in an index fund or however, or if you're working and you have a 401k, put it in there. And then, yes, stocks are on sale right now. And so it would be a great time to invest if you got that money. It could be a good time to increase your contributions in your retirement plan. Many people who start off, especially young, may start off at like just 3%. So now push that if you can so that you are buying more now while the market is down.
All right. I want to ask you, Michelle Singletary, about people who maybe have either lost their jobs or have had their hours cut, seen their income gone down, and they're worried about repaying loans, whether it's a car loan or one's mortgage. Yeah. What is your advice to people about paying money you owe right now?
So you have to prioritize it. I would put credit cards at the bottom, to be honest. If you only have a limited amount of money, you can't cover everything. Now, we've been telling people to call your mortgage lender, call your credit card company, call your auto lender, and lots of people are coming back to me saying, I can't get through. You're just going to have to keep trying because the forbearance and the deferrals, you have to talk to someone to get it. Many of the institutions have not set it up so that you can get it automatically. Although some bankers are saying, especially credit cards are saying, you know, we're going to already waive late fees and penalties if you can't pay. So concentrate on the things that are most important, your mortgage and your car payment, and be in touch with your lender. Either call them or email them. Everybody knows what's going on. If you want to email some proof that you've lost your job or you've been furloughed, that will help once they are able to get to you. This is much like what happened in the housing crisis. We're hoping and that the lenders will do the right thing and put in place a way for people to get some sort of forbearance until, you know, our economy recovers or is on the road to recovery.
All right, let's see. I'm going to go to an email from Kathy. I have enjoyed working in Maine's restaurants for 30 years. I am adept at planning my finances around Maine's busy and slow seasons. But this crisis has turned my careful planning upside down. I do have savings in an HSA. Are there any plans on loosening the restrictions on the use of these savings?
I have not seen anything about that just yet. I'll look into it after this call because that'd be a great thing to write about. But the government is looking at all kinds of ways to help people get money into these accounts. For example, your retirement account. Typically, if you're 59 and a half or younger, you can't tap your retirement plan without a penalty, a 10% penalty. They have waived that. If you have been impacted by the coronavirus, and Kathy would qualify for that. You also can take a loan up to $100,000 where it was 50 before. So there are things in place. I would encourage her to call her company in HR or send them an email to ask what is allowed based on the stimulus package that just passed.
We'll go to Ellery, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to ask a question of Ms. Singletary. A quick question about the stimulus package and the amounts that might be doled out from the IRS. I was curious at what advice might be given. Sometimes the government taketh away what they giveth. So I was wondering, at the end of the next year, whether or not this amount might be taxed or asked for back. I mean, I know a lot will change between now and then, but do you have any question or any advice what we might do just in case there we need to prepare for giving some of it back in tax form or whatever?
Right. Well, I have great news for you. This amount of money will not be taxed, so you do not have to worry about that at all. In fact, the amount is based technically on your 2020 income, but many people won't know that until you file next year. So even if you earn more than it would allow, but you get money based on either your 2018 or 2019 return, you don't even have to pay that money back. So you're in good – you shouldn't worry. The money you get is not going to be taxed, so you're in good shape.
Ellery, thanks so much for your call. We are going to take a quick break. We're talking with personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary. Maybe you know her work from the Washington Post or many of the other newspapers around the country who publish her column, or maybe you've read one of her books. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can post a comment to our Facebook page. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet @MaineCalling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Marshall Communications, the PR Maven podcast, with industry leaders, executives, media, and online influencers. More at marshallpr.com. And Green Hut Galleries, with its 10th biennial Portland show, a group show celebrating Portland April 2nd through May 30th. GreenHutGalleries.com.
The grim images of Wuhan, China, headlined the news for weeks. And for cartoonist Laura Gao,
it's been crazy to not only hear so many people finally know about my hometown, but it's also disheartening to know that all they know is the bad parts of it.
So she created a comic to share her city called The Wuhan I Know, another side of Wuhan, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Trusted news, quality entertainment, and lifelong learning is what Maine Public Television is all about and four channels strong. We've made some adjustments to provide more daytime educational fare, from science to history programming for the older kids who find themselves home during this time of social distancing. We have the PBS Kids channel for preschool kids, but our main channel just added more afternoon programming for older learners starting now at 1:30 each afternoon. And the Maine Public World channel is now doing the same each weekday afternoon from 12 to 5. Television programming that is worthwhile and educational to watch. See the schedule for our Maine HD and World channels at mainepublic.org. Just click on the television drop-down.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are addressing the financial crisis that has been brought on by COVID-19 and what choices people are facing. My guest, Michelle Singletary, who writes a nationally syndicated personal finance column for The Washington Post. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now, John Paradise, who is Vice President of Communications for Town and Country Federal Credit Union. John, thanks for calling in, and tell us about the resources that credit unions in Maine are making available to members right now during this crisis.
Well, good to speak with you, Jen, and thanks. It's a crisis that's really different in the sense that, in the crisis of 2008 and 2009, it was really driven by financial services and the issues brought on by, you know, various aspects of that industry. But this is a different type of crisis. And so people are reaching out for different needs. You know, we're finding people needing short-term assistance. You know, we've got special loans that we brought into the scene, and people are taking advantage of that. People are, at least, you know, one of the big differences between this and 2008 and 2009, people are reaching out, people are having a conversation, and that's what we're trying to drill home to people, that reach out, have a conversation, you know, anything from loan deferments to refunds to skip a pay to the special loans, et cetera. There are a lot of ways and resources that people can access and get assistance, but they need to have that conversation. I think sometimes people in the past have waited too long or waited before they've gotten deeper into financial stress and distress before reaching out. And I think on the upside, people are taking advantage of those resources out there.
John, quickly before I let you go, I want to ask you, is Town and Country and our other federal credit unions, are they feeling overwhelmed? I mean, these are small organizations with, I'm guessing, not giant staffs. Do you have the people to be able to handle all the questions you're getting right now?
Well, that's a great question. Right now, I mean, we're fortunate in the fact that we have a lot of staff. We have a lot of resources that, help in the regular, you know, we have 40,000 members. So we're used to dealing with quite a few people on a regular basis. But from a capacity standpoint, as far as, you know, certain areas, you know, I think people are waiting maybe a little bit longer than they would in normal operations. And of course, you know, we're conducting transactions differently because it's only drive-through service. We're seeing a lot more contact through our call center. So we worry about that, but we're taking steps and precautions to make sure our staff is there when people need them. But, you know, as long as this crisis continues, these are going to be ongoing issues. And, you know, I think the uncertainty of it all is what is the top of the mind for a lot of people. And that's most concerning to us. And we're trying to make sure everything keeps on going as long as they need us.
Well, John Paradise, thanks so much for calling in. John is the Vice President of Communications with Town and Country Federal Credit Union. Michelle Singletary, in the reporting that you've done, what are you hearing from other banks and credit unions about their ability to handle the onslaught of calls?
Well, what I'm hearing from readers is that they can't get through, that so many people, you know, today is April 1, so people's mortgages and car payments and credit card, not credit card payments, but car loans are due. And so they're calling and being on hold for hours on end. They have to talk to a person to get the help. And the bigger the institution, the more calls. So they, you know, there are a couple people I've, readers have heard from, they were able to get through and get some relief. But just remember, you know, depending on where the institution has their car centers, the people, they're working from home too with limited capacity. So the thing is, just be as patient as possible. I'm hoping that more institutions will extend their call hours so that it would even out. So, you know, everyone trying to call between 9 and 5, maybe they have them open till later tonight when the volume might be lower. But all I can tell you is just to be as patient as possible and just keep trying until you get someone on the line.
An email from Elizabeth. I drive a very old car, a 1998 Toyota Corolla, and live on a fixed income. Each year when it comes time for inspection, I wait to see how many repairs my car will need to pass. This year, I am considering using my $1,200 stimulus check as a down payment to buy a used car. Do you think that this spring is a good time to buy a car? I know there are some challenges to car shopping during a pandemic, since I will likely need to do more research with car dealers and financial institutions via the telephone, but I also think there may be good car deals available. The stimulus check allows me to have a down payment, which I might not otherwise be able to supply. What do you think about Elizabeth's question?
Well, I think right now, I hope car dealers aren't mad at me, but I just think things are so in flux that I would not take on a new loan right now. Now, if she's got steady income coming in and this is not an issue, then okay. But it would be difficult shopping for a car and driving it and testing it. And I'm a big fan of holding on to the car until you're on a first-name basis with the local tow truck drivers. I mean, if you've got a car and say it needs, you know, $900 repair, that's a big savings as opposed to buying and getting into a new loan. So me, I would keep fixing it as long as it's still safe and is passing an inspection.
All right, an email from Sandy. Wondering if a professional whose salary has been cut by 38% is eligible for partial unemployment.
Tell me the question again. I'm sorry.
She's a professional whose salary has been cut by 38%. If your salary's been cut, you haven't been laid off, are you eligible for partial unemployment?
I don't believe that you are, but the best place to find that out is to contact the state labor department or unemployment office for your state to find out. I believe that you have to have no income, like you've been laid off or even furloughed. But again, check with your state because all of these directions are going to be coming through your state.
All right. We'll go to Mary, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you, Jennifer and Michelle. Mine is just a statement. I work in healthcare. It's very disconcerting to see that the whole country is not on lockdown at the same time. And the financial problem is going to be extended, I believe, because of this. And if the president would come out and say, everybody follow the same rules, I do believe that we would all get through this much more quickly.
All right, Mary, thanks for your call. Michelle, do you have anything to add to that?
I believe Mary is right. I mean, in those areas, I've been reading stories about those who've had this happen, even in China, when they locked down everyone. And even if you went out to go to the grocery store, they were taking your temperature at the door and things like that. I mean, if we could do that as a country, just pause, all of us, stay in place, it would stem the spread of the virus, which is the cause of businesses shutting down, because we don't know who has it. You could be completely present yourself as healthy and have it. And I remember when all this first happened in March and my children were home, and it was just hard to convince them, persuade them to just stay put. And then finally my husband and I was like, you're just not going. I don't care. You're going to be fussing. Go up into your room. I don't care. And we just stomped it. But I believe that is true. We all have to play our part in this. Stay put if you don't have to go out. You know, we have to be comfortable with being still. That's the one thing this virus has shown us, that we are so busy and we're so self-centered. I read a story about a couple who was having a baby, and the husband presented him, had some look like he had the virus, and he wanted to go to the hospital and see his baby born. And I get that. But as a result, now a whole unit is locked down and people were exposed. Folks, this virus is attacking all of us, whether you are financially hit or not. And we all need to do our part. If you get a stimulus check and you don't need that money, pass it on to someone that you know who needs it. Give it to a local nonprofit or your church or synagogue or religious community. You know, if you know people who are in trouble and you've got extra money, don't even wait for them to ask. Send them money. Say, hey, I know you're probably not working at the restaurant. Let me help you with this. I have friends who said they're still paying local providers, like if they had, you know, massage therapists or housekeeper come in, a house service, they're still paying them because they can afford to so that they don't get hit. This is an equalizer, this virus, and we all have to think about our neighbors before we act, because whatever you do can impact so many other people.
Mary, thank you so much for your call. We'll move on to Bar Harbor and Anne. Hi, Anne. Go ahead. You're on with Michelle Singletary.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank you both as representatives of the mainstream media for doing so much under such, you know, challenging conditions to help us through that. And relating to what Ms. Singletary just said, I want to recommend Mary Elizabeth House in D.C., which is helping mothers and children break the cycle of poverty. Now, my question has to do with pensions, and I'm very fortunate to have one, and I put everything I could into it. And at 70 and a half, I've been hit by the mandatory required distribution. So I have two questions regarding that. One is it true that it's going to be suspended for this year because there was a threat that they were taking it out based on 2019 numbers, which would decimate, you know, what was in the pension? And the other thing is whether you could speak to changes in legislation. There's one line on the Social Security tax form that results in what's called the Social Security torpedo tax bomb, which when you get your mandatory distribution for middle and lower middle income people, it pushes you just that much above the line that my taxes went from $1,700 altogether to $10,000 this year. So those are my two questions.
Michelle?
Right. So the answer to your first question is yes, required minimum distributions or RMDs have been suspended for 2020. So if you were required to take an RMD, either because you're 70 and a half or you might have been 70 and a half at the end of 2019 and elected to push that payment until today, April 1, you do not have to take that distribution. If you did take it within the last 60 days, you can put that money back without any tax repercussions. So that it is true. And if you want more information about that, you can go to irs.gov, which has issued some information about that. So that is true. And the reason why they did that is because the RMDs for 2019 are based on what your value was at the end of the year. Well, we had a better stock market, and so that means people's portfolios are gone down. And if you have to take money out of it, you're going to take it in a down market. Now, recognizing that many people have already taken it or need to take it, they can't not take their money. They need it. And so just go ahead and take your money. If you need it, you need it, and make the distribution. But if you can get by without it, you don't have to make that distribution for 2020.
All right. Thanks for your call, Anne. I'm going to read two emails that are related to you, Michelle. This one from Kathy. So many times people answer the question about market impacts on retirement funds as it relates to younger people. What is her advice for people who are 10 or 5 years from retirement? And then another question is from Ginny. I'm a 66-year-old retiree with a Roth IRA. I'm wondering if I should pull out now and put remains of my toward my mortgage.
Well, okay, so I hear this all the time, but here's the truth of the matter is that we're living longer on average in retirement. So even if you're at the door of retirement or you're retired, most likely you're going to live another 20 or 30 years, and you're going to need some growth. So the answer to the question of what should I do if I'm retired is the same as if you're a young adult. You're going to need some growth. Now, hopefully you have a diversified portfolio so that you're not as exposed as someone, say, in their 20s who might have 80 or 90% of their market's money in stocks. If you're, you know, retired, you've got less, and you should have less because you don't have as much time for the market to retire because you need your money, not because you're going to die tomorrow, but you're going to live. So I would not sell everything and move it to something, because then you will absolutely lock in their losses. If you need to tap that money, there's a way to tap it. So maybe you tap the bonds part of it rather than the stocks to give that chance to grow. And that's where you would talk to a professional. Okay, I need to take money out. It's a down market. Where should I take it out first to minimize my losses?
Great advice. We're going to go here to Gail. Will there be any tax ramifications if I receive a large gift of $45,000 from a parent at this time?
Well, okay, so when you give someone money, the tax burden is actually on the giver, not the receiver. So the parent would have to file a gift tax return, and you have a maximum that you have lifetime. So it would depend on what her parents, if they've been giving other people money. But she personally wouldn't owe taxes on that $45,000. It's the person who gave it to her.
Okay. A tweet, will the IRS or DHHS, that's Department of Health and Human Services, take money away if you owe either of these agencies?
So for the stimulus checks, they are not taking back money if you owe, you know, back taxes or some other set aside. You know, oftentimes it's like, say you haven't been paying your student loans and you file your return and you get a refund, they'll snatch it. So except for possibly child support, they will not be taking money from checks if you owe other agencies, not for this. Because the whole point of the stimulus checks is to get money into people's hands so they can pay their bills now.
We are going to take another quick break. You're listening to a special two-hour Maine Calling. During this hour, we are discussing personal finance challenges with syndicated columnist Michelle Singletary. In our second hour segment, we are going to talk with news editors about the top issues facing Maine, and we'll also hear from Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Bread and Butter Catering Company, committed to creating bountiful feasts and custom drinks, showcasing their love for Maine. BreadandButterCompany.com.
COVID-19 has changed daily life in the United States, and with news breaking by the hour, it can be hard to stay up to date. I'm Michelle Martin. Join us every weekday for a new live conversation about the disease, what you need to know, what's coming next, and we will answer your questions. The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's weeknights at 9 here on Maine Public Radio. You can count on and trust Maine Public Television with your children because our PBS Kids programming is educational, safe, and non-commercial, where you can find kids programming on the Maine Television Channel mornings and early afternoons. It is also available 24/7 on the PBS Kids Television Channel, and this channel is also available for online streaming on your mobile device. To learn more, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the television drop-down.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. In this hour, we're talking with author and nationally syndicated Washington Post personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary. What financial questions do you have about this living through the coronavirus pandemic? Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Brenda, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Brenda, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to let our people know, our local communities know, that Evergreen Credit Union is offering a Your Money 101 program. And we realized that with our lobbies being closed, the 7 people dedicated to financial counseling and helping our local members, local communities with financial counseling needs, made it a little bit more challenging. But we do have tools that are available to people, and we'd be happy to share that with them. They just need to go online to egcu.org, look under benefits and education and search for financial counseling. Send us your name, and we'd be happy to send you all the tools that you that may help you get through this financially difficult period.
That's wonderful, Brenda. And if you would, go on to the Maine Calling Facebook page and put that information under today's post. That would be really helpful so that people who are not listening with a pencil in their hand have that information. I'm going to go to an email from Dee. She writes, "It's my understanding that my mortgage is backed by Fannie Mae, and it's my understanding that it is a government loan. I spoke to my local bank who services this loan and found out that Fannie Mae is not offering deferment and only forbearance, which means I can get a 3-month reprise, but at the end of 90 days, I have to pay the 3 months in total along with a 4th month payment. Am I correct in this? Seemed to me the government should be offering a better and more helpful solution."
Well, I've been hearing a lot of people say that as well. I think that I don't think that is correct. I think that she should call them back because the program that they put in place was supposed to be forbearance where they tack it on to the end of the loan, but it also could be who owns the loan. That's the other thing. If it's a pool of investors, it's up to them. So I would call back and find out if because a lot of this stuff is moving targets. A lot of the information, you know, the stimulus package just passed, and the person that she talked to might not have had the most up-to-date information.
All right, we're going to go to Missy calling from Madawaska. Hi, Missy. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Listen, I've got a student loan that's been in arrears for a while. I have very low income, and there's been some family situations where I hadn't been able to work consistently. But in any case, my student loans are so behind that there's an offset that whenever I had try to do my taxes, they would immediately apply towards the balance of that student loan, which accrues daily interest. And I spoke with a person with this company, Silver Loan Student Advisors, earlier this year about my student loan, and, you know, they mentioned that they could help me get it out of default if there was, you know, that I would have to pay their fee. But my question for calling is, if your student loan is at the point with this stimulus check coming through the Treasury and all that, if your student loan is in default to the point that whenever you applied for taxes and whatever refund you had applied was directly applied to an offset, would you even get, you know, are you even included in to the point that, you know, you don't file taxes, like I didn't file for 218 for 2018 or 2019, are we included? You know, is someone like that included in this situation?
All right. Michelle?
Yes, you are included. So I would encourage you to absolutely file your return for 2019. The stimulus checks are going to be based on either your 2018 or 2019, whichever one is on file. There will not be an offset for that student loan. So you will get your money if you qualify, and it sounds like you would, for probably if you're filing for single, the $1,200. So, yes, you should file your return. The normal offset for that should not apply.
All right, Missy, thanks so much for your call. We have a caller who dropped who just wanted to share, Michelle, that you are terrific, and that listener appreciates how well you're answering all these varied questions. We have a tweet here. I made over $75,000 in 2019 but got laid off in 2020. How do I qualify for the $1,200 stimulus check? This person just automatically gets it, right, Michelle?
Yeah, so if you filed your 2018, it'll be based on that. If you haven't filed your 2019, it'll based on 2018. If you filed 2019, it'll based on that. And they should get, even if you're over 75, you'll get some money because it's reduced up until you hit $99,000 if you're single, filing single. So that person will still get some money. The Washington Post has a great calculator, a stimulus check calculator on our main page. If you go to WashingtonPost.com and you look up, it's at the top, stimulus check calculator. You can put in your filing status, how much you made, and it'll tell you how much you get. Because after $75,000, it's $150 if you're married, there's a reduction $5 for every $100 over that baseline $75,000. So this person still will get some money. Use the simulator calculator and you'll be able to figure out how much you're going to get. And one quick thing, because my kid says we don't qualify. But if you have dependents, the children have to be under 17 for you to get the bonus for your children for $500 per child. But if you are, you know, a high earner, even if you have children younger than 16, you still wouldn't get any money because you're beyond the amount that is allowed for the stimulus check.
All right. We're going to go to Hillary calling from Saco. Hi, Hillary. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, I'm a licensed massage therapist and an independent contractor under someone else's business. I cannot take out a personal loan because of my own financial issues. So I'm just trying to figure out the best route to take to receive some financial support.
So, Hillary, you should qualify for unemployment because they typically, you'd have to be a working person, but they've changed the rules because of what's happening. If you're an independent contractor, you usually have a side gig. So you should get some money. You have to contact your state main to find out, you know, what you qualify for, how much. And there's also an additional $600 a week. So I would encourage you to right away apply for unemployment, and then you'll get some information about how much you would qualify for under the stimulus package that just passed.
All right. Hillary, thanks so much for calling. An email from Beverly. I officially retired on February 28th. I have three IRAs that are taking the hit. Am I safer withdrawing my monies and putting them in a federally insured savings account? Also, my husband, who is 52 and employed, and I are buying a farm. Would it be wiser to use some of my IRA funds for down payments to get the lowest possible mortgage payment?
Wow. So, again, you don't want to take all your money out. The market is definitely down from its high earlier, you know, from a year ago. And so if you move all your money, you're going to lock in all those losses. So if you have to tap your money, only tap what you need, so that you don't attribute those losses to everything that you have in there. And I know everybody's really scared. We don't know how long this is going to last, but we do know that it will end. We know that there's a race for vaccines. So let's say it takes the maximum, which is what the health professionals are saying, 18 months. So in 18 months, when things stabilize, if we do have a good vaccine, things will go back somewhat to normal. And then, you know, I'm just taking a guess for y'all. I don't know for sure. But, you know, 2 or 3 years, everything will be back. And you have time to weather that, even in retirement. But you will lock in your losses if you sell everything now. And if you have an IRA, hopefully it's well diversified so you don't have to take everything. Look at the part of it that is not down, say the bonds, and tap that money. And I do hope that they're already positioned to get this farm and they've worked the numbers and it's affordable. If you were already going to be stretched, I'd hold off and wait to see how things shake out. You know, the one thing that this virus has exposed, and I loathe to criticize anybody right now because this is not the time to say, I told you so, don't do this. But what it has exposed is a lot of bad financial practices from a lot of folks, and mostly, I would say, from people who know, who have the money, and just kind of didn't save when they could save, and they weren't paying attention to their retirement and how they were investing. And so if the lesson here is good practices are good practices no matter what the economy is doing, and I had an awful time convincing people to save and put off vacations and don't send your kids out of state if you can't afford it. If I talked to a reader who took out a, you know, home equity loan to send her kid out of state when they could have gone in state. These are all practices that are coming back to bite people. So going forward, let's do the right things with our money so that when it rains, and this is a monsoon, you can weather the storm a little bit better.
An email from Bruce. 59 days after 9/11, the Dow Jones was back at the level of September 10th. Pick any 10-year period in the market's history and it has made money. 97% of any 5-year period has done the same. Don't panic sell.
Yeah.
Michelle, would you agree?
I would agree. And I love the way he wrote that, don't panic sell, because he didn't say don't panic. Listen, I'm panicked. I'm worried. I got gray hair now in the back of my head that I probably didn't have before. So feel what you feel. I think it's a disservice to tell people, don't calm down. I mean, when my husband says that, I want to punch him, because what you're saying is I'm being irrational. It's not being irrational to be scared right now. That's the truth of the matter. It's scary for all of us. But you don't want to act out of that panic. And just take a pause. Remember, we talked about this at the beginning. Take a pause before you make a decision. Even if you have to tap your retirement fund because you have no other money, still take a pause. How much do I need to get? And don't take, like, if you've got $100,000 in your account, don't take all of it thinking I'm going to need it. Take what you need for now so that you don't get hit with taxes, on that money, and keep it in the market for when it goes up. So I love that. Don't panic sell if you don't have to. And again, one way to do that is stop looking. Do something else to take your mind off of what the market's doing, because if you keep looking and keep listening, it will scare you to the point where you'll make a decision that is not in your best interest long term, even if you are retired. Because if you're 65, you're very likely, if you're in fairly good health condition and you have a good family history of that, to live for another 30 years. My family, we had people live to 100. You know, some of them get on my nerves. I'm like, why are you still here? I'm just joking, folks. I'm just joking. But, we've got long family history in my family. So, when I retire at 65, it's very likely that I could live to 90 or 100 based on my own family history. So that means your market still has to grow. And I give really long answers, but here's why your money needs to grow. Because your biggest threat, regardless of what the market is doing, is inflation. Your dollars tomorrow have to buy what you need. And if you put it in the mattress, which please don't do that, or a low-yielding bank deposit account, it's not going to keep pace with inflation. And you need to buy milk in 20 years. And if you don't have money that's growing, you won't be able to buy that milk.
All right, we're going to see if we can squeeze in another call. Stephen in Naples, go ahead. If you can be quick, it would be great.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question about, I've had a parent plus loan that I took out for my two kids' college education for quite a while, and now it's with Navient as the servicer of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And they, when I called, they told me that I don't qualify for the, coronavirus relief that is going on, because even though it's a federal loan, that for some reason, I don't qualify. I wanted to know what your guests thought about that. Does that sound right?
So one of the ways, can I ask you a quick question? So has your income been disrupted because of the coronavirus? Do you have it? Does anybody in your household have it? Or are you taking care of somebody who has it?
No, we haven't.
So that's why you don't qualify. So I think lots of people are hearing this information. They think you automatically apply the things that have come down from the stimulus package, much of it has to relate to people who have been financially impacted by the virus. So if your income hasn't, or you haven't been sick or something like that, it doesn't apply. And that makes sense, right? Because we want to help the people who need it the most. Now, I say that recognizing that it's probably still a hardship for you to pay this, but unfortunately, when things happen, it's like in a hospital, emergency room, they call it triage, right? They treat and help the people who need it the most. And if you've just got a swollen hand or something like that, they're going to put you last, and that makes sense. You want to take care of the people who need it the most, and so unfortunately that would not include you. So I would just suggest that you do what you can to maybe have to talk to them about some sort of other payment plan, see if you can get on something. I think you do qualify for some sort of income based repayment. Are you already on that?
No, you, with a Parent PLUS loan, you don't qualify for that. And unfortunately, even though I've been paying religiously for years and years, but the amount I owe has gone up by only almost $30,000, because I was ignorant and took some forbearances when we had a hardship.
It
seems like I'd be better off dealing with the mafia than the government.
Well, no. Now let's back off from that, because let's just be real. Can I just be real with you? Is that okay? Because I don't want to fuss at people.
Yes,
but...
I,
Michelle, you've got a minute to be real.
Okay, so let me be real. So here's the problem, and this is why I encourage people not to take out these loans if you can't afford it. You took it out. You got to pay it back. And so just be as patient. It may take you that 30 years, but that's the consequences, and you know that, right? So just don't be upset that you can't get relief, because it's going to go to people who need it more, and just do what you can to pay as you go now, and it may take that time. But that's the consequence of your actions. I hope that doesn't sound so harsh, but that's the reality.
Stephen, thanks for your call. And Michelle Singletary, thank you so much for joining us for this hour. I think you've gained even more fans. Michelle Singletary, the personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Her most recent book is The 21-Day Financial Fast. In our next hour, we'll talk with Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap and our panel of editorial page editors to discuss the census and the top issues facing Mainers. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this news.